Sometimes the future isn't just written. Sometimes it's rewritten. And sometimes it fights back. You're listening to the Curvature Chronicles. Welcome back to the Curvature Key. In this episode, Sarah finally admits what Castor has begun to fear. The artifact is changing him. But what exactly is it shaping him into? And while Castor struggles with the weight of choice, Vershek moves one step closer to his own deadly goal. The balance between survival and betrayal has never been more fragile.
Vershek hates the wind here. So much wind! It cuts through him, burns through him. How he longed for the world of his forefathers. How he wished he was back on Kren, still wearing the borrowed image of an older human man. Vershek crouched near a grate outside an office complex. Steam helps, although it was wet and uncomfortable in its own way. Heat helped. The ache in his bones, though, just kept growing. He was supposed to be home a hero by now. He'd steal the artifact, expose the outpost, assassinate the High Command, broadcast coordinates through folded space, and his people, the mightiest in the universe, would have crushed this Zorathian problem out of existence. But now it's in the hands of that Zorathian flea and her pet Zorathian sympathizer. A soft-bodied creature who shouldn't have been able to touch the powerful artifact, let alone hold it for this long. He hisses through thin teeth, breath fogging in the cold. He's already seeing signs. The awful climate here. His skin felt like parchment. Fingers look black. He checks his helix crystal signal fragment. Still no word from his handler or pulse from the artifact. No ripple of its gate signature. Still blanketed by that Zorathian. But Vershek had sensed something earlier. The other one. He's shifting due to his proximity to the book. The artifact is learning him. Opening. Sinking with him. He was furious. The double helix thing had no right to be near the artifact. He had to find him before any transformation was complete. Then he could take it back. Twist the key his way. Even if that creature got broken in the process.
He doesn't feel like he's falling. Not that Castor had ever fallen a long way before. There was that time he fell 9 feet off a catwalk at the Chicago stockyards. His father had snatched him out of that pen so fast he hadn't really remembered hitting the ground. No, it feels more like remembering something. Or trying to. Only it isn't a memory that he'd lived. When it had started, Castor was in his dorm room actually trying to study for the first time in what seemed like weeks. He was reading an article about megalithic alignments at Stonehenge. It was the kind of thing he'd seen often enough before that he'd usually just scan it with mild interest. Times were not usual. The moment his eyes caught on the phrase, prehistoric intent, the artifact book which was sitting next to him closed on his desk, slammed open. Light came off the pages everywhere. The entire room was filled with a light he could physically feel. Castor felt like he was surrounded. Then all the sound goes away. Then everything else in the world just peels away too.
Suddenly, he's standing in a broad green field. It stretches as far as he can see in all directions. He looks up at a few puffy white clouds that are seemingly not moving in a sky that seems a little too blue. There's no wind. He sees, over to his right, massive stones, dozens of them. They lie scattered and half buried in rows. None of them have been lifted or arranged in the circle yet. He knew that he was at Stonehenge. It was so real feeling that he couldn't be imagining this.
Then, to his left, Castor sees the people. But they're not like the people he's seen in textbooks. These aren't grunting brutes in skins. This group is organized, focused. Castor can see their eyes shinning with fervent, geometric intent. Near one of the chalked, lined circles stands a woman, chanting in a rhythm. Cast hadn't noticed it before, but there are vibrations emanating from the very ground. Those vibrations are the same rhythm as the blonde women's chanting. Castor moves toward her, but then he sees something that makes his feet and heart stop. The woman is holding a small, leather-bound book. It looks exactly like his, but it's not worn. It looks newer. No wrinkles around the symbols on the cover, which is bound shut with twine. Even closed, though, Castor can tell it's glowing faintly violet.
Keykeeper,
the woman said aloud without looking up.
Why have you come early?
He starts backing away.
What did you call me?
Then stones around her begin to hum in that same rhythm. The field all around them begins to darken.
It is not your time. You shouldn't be here yet.
She hesitates and leans closer to him, then smiles.
Yes, of course. But it knows your blood.
Castor's world flips over and tears sideways. He wakes up on his dorm room floor again. No time has passed. The same annoying commercial about some diabetic drug was still on the radio. His legs, though, they ache like he's walked for miles. His palms are dirty and his mouth tastes like pollen. He looks over at the book lying open beside him. Words swirl into shape on the page. The stones were moved by memory. Sarah finds him passed out in the hallway, sweating and babbling.
Castor, you okay?
He looks up at her, disoriented, but nods.
You jumped,
she says flatly. Castor continues to nod.
I saw a book. My book. New, though, but ancient. And a woman holding the book called me Keykeeper.
He breathed deeply to try and help calm himself. Sarah closed her eyes.
It's begun, then.
She takes Castor by the arm and leads him over to the geology lab basement. It's cold and isolated.
You need to tell me what you meant. What's begun?
He reaches out and shoves her arm. Almost no effect. Like pushing a wall. She reaches down and turns on a strange-looking device sitting next to a table. Sarah gestures for him to sit at it. Castor crosses his arms.
No, not till you answer me.
My answers will be more accurate after we run this test.
Test? In that? What is that thing? At least tell me that.
She starts to push him down gently into the chair, but does answer him. Sort of.
It's kind of a scanner slash reader for exotic biology.
Biology? That's crazy. Why is it in the geology lab basement, then?
Because I didn't want to hide it somewhere that the surrounding people might figure out what it is. Now please sit down, Castor, so I can see how far the book has changed you. You know that as shapeshifters, Zarathian changes are more than just cosmetic. They go all the way down. If you'd put your hands on that metal plate.
Castor did as he was told. Then, Sarah placed her hand on his back for a moment, and everything was still. Then, he feels something, as if something is crawling through the palms of his hands and up through his arms.
Sarah?
Castor, hush.
Beneath his skin, it feels like something is scraping his bones. It's not pleasant, but when the feeling reaches where Sarah's hand is, the pain just stops. Sarah gasps and pulls her hand away.
Well, thankfully that's over.
One look at Sarah's face stopped him cold.
What?
You're resonant. Partially, anyway.
And what does that mean?
It means the book is changing you. You're not simply a human anymore. You're part.
Part what, Sarah?
She puts her hand on her head.
Your DNA must be changing, somehow. You almost seem part Zarathian. Castor, you're being turned into something entirely new.
Castor stares at her, mouth hanging agape.
Part Zarathian? How can that be? What does that mean?
How it's possible? I don't know. As far as what it means, you're not just the key holder now. You're becoming the key.
Sarah sat alone on the roof of a campus parking lot. She'd been there since she'd taken Castor back to his dorm room last night. The sun blazed down on the concrete. It was too hot for most humans to be comfortable, but it was just right for her. Heat helped to calm her thoughts, and right now her thoughts were moving way too fast. She'd been almost certain before, but the tests confirmed it. The book was changing Castor. He isn't just reacting to the book, he's merging with it somehow, folding him into something it can wield or wear, or maybe just something it can become. She exhaled slowly, watching the air ripple off a sun-drenched car nearby. She had to admit that the entire artifact thing wasn't really in her wheelhouse. Most of her mission was just to observe and redirect any research initiatives that targeted Mercury somewhere else. She knew some general things from training, though. Other than that, she was mostly to observe and report back. What had her training said about artifact portals? If an object portal finds its match, the directive said, do not stop it. It is the only way we learn about these portals, egos and goals. But did that make any sense here on Earth? That directive was written and memorized 4 million light years away. This was a primitive planet. Then there was Castor, a bright-eyed anthropology student with a coffee-stained hoodie and knack for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And yet, the book had jumped. She started piecing together her recent report. The Kren must have been the one that stole the artifact from Oryx Station. She was beginning to wonder if the artifact hadn't allowed the Kren to do it, maybe even lured him into breaking its seal so it could escape. The book might need conflict, pressure, so it went anywhere it could. But it was a Zarathian artifact and hadn't gone to her, the only Zarathian on the planet as far as she knew. It went to Castor. She remembered in her studies of artifacts during her academy training that an artifact might even have been this book, saying to someone,
you are a seed, but your soil is elsewhere.
Was Castor that soil? He's not even Zarathian. His DNA shouldn't have even registered, yet he'd already absorbed enough of the book to show the beginning of resonance. He's already jumping, bending, feeling reality blur around the edges. What was it that Castor had told her that the woman in the field at Stonehenge had said?
Keykeeper, it is not your time. You shouldn't be here yet. But of course, it knows your blood.
Her head snapped up with recognition. The woman must have been a keykeeper, likely from a previous cycle. That means the artifact has done this before. It's marked certain places, and maybe even people. It's left breadcrumbs through time. There was only so many ways to deal correctly with these artifacts. Sarah knew that if the Kren had used the book as a portal to Earth, then he still had a residual link to it. This was true even if the artifact preferred another. In this case, Castor. If the Kren has a residual link, it allows him to track, influence, and maybe even reclaim it. There are two ways to stop that. Option A, the portal is destroyed. Next to impossible unless you could throw them into a pulsar. Option B, the person with the link is killed. She stares west as she stands looking toward the horizon and the ever-falling sun.
Why him?
She mumbles aloud.
How and why, Castor Ames? What are you planning?
She didn't expect an answer. Unbeknown to Sarah, the book, however, in Castor's bag seemed at that moment to warm slightly. Not from the heat, from recognition. Still, Vrashek can feel it, like a dull ache just behind his thoughts, his link to the book, faint now, fuzzy like an old transmission, but it persists. Maybe that's the curse of opening it by force. He had marked it and forced it open. It had marked him back. The Kren crouched in an alley near the university's tunnels. Every hour the book pulses, a tiny ripple in his skull at first, but stronger now. Still, he knows that the book doesn't want to be possessed by him. It wants to be far away. But it doesn't fully leave him.
You are still mine. You just don't know it yet.
Or maybe the artifact did know it. That's the part that unsettled him the most. He took as deep a breath of the foul, cold air as possible. It escaped from his grasp like a parasite jumping from one host to another. If it had chosen the Zarathian girl, it wouldn't have been shocking. She was close. But then it had just ignored her and linked itself to some half-evolved human, a soft, impressionable half-evolved animal. That shouldn't have happened. It should be impossible. Yet here he was, a specially trained warrior for the mighty Kren Empire. Cold. Dying. Losing. And he didn't even know where he was. None of the star constellations looked right. The star heating this world was too far away to be comfortable for Kren or Zarathian either. He knew that much. He clutched his head. Another pulse, but this one feels thicker. Like the bond is adapting to someone new. The Zarathian, perhaps? Or maybe the animal is being rewritten. That means time is running out. Kren do not survive well in chaos. He must kill the male without damaging the book. It was his only ticket off this desolate green world. The moment he kills him, the link to him from the book will be broken. The artifact, if it doesn't go inert, should revert back to the next previous stable imprint. That would be Vrashek. He stares at the steam rising up through a nearby grate. He can smell the heat. Not enough, but better than this foul atmosphere. He closes his eyes and steps onto the grate.
Better.
In his and the artifact's current state, he can only sense it briefly. But as the boy and the artifact interact more and more, as it bonds with the artifact, the signals get stronger. That link is almost like a beacon.
Keep sinking. Keep playing your part. I only need to find you once.
He runs through the solution he's come up with again. Kill the human, take the artifact.
It happened when Castor was brushing his teeth. No build-up, no shimmer, no noise. Just snap. The lights in his bathroom flicker. The mirror looks like it's vibrating. Then he's not in his bathroom anymore. He's standing on broken asphalt. The surrounding air is thick with electricity and smoke. The sky above him looks cracked. And not metaphorically. The sky looks fractured. Shattered glass holding back something darker on the other side. Hexagonal patterns blink faintly through cloud breaks. On Castor's left, the intersection is being consumed by fire. The street sign, University Boulevard, is the only thing that hasn't become engulfed in flame. There are bodies,
Some are wearing armor that isn't any military issue he recognizes. Some don't look human at all. Cast turns to look behind him and sees himself. Older looking, tired, scarred. Wearing a Zarathian-looking chest plate over his hoodie, the sleeves torn, the armor scratched and dented. His hands are glowing blue, like the book does every time it opens. It's become part of him. The older caster crouches down beside someone that has collapsed on the ground. Purple hair fans out all over the concrete. "Sarah?" he whispers. The older caster looks up at the sound and stares directly at him. But this isn't a repeat of Stonehenge. The older caster doesn't look surprised, or even confused, just resigned. Young caster's heart hammers.
"Is she..."
The older caster shook his head.
"You still have time. If you stop watching and start choosing..."
Before he can ask, "Choose what?" the darkness from the crack in the sky finally wins. Caster is ripped backward toward it. He gasps awake on his bathroom floor. His toothbrush is still in his hand. The water is still running in the sink. Less than 10 seconds have probably passed. He rises and hears a humming sound from his desk. He walks over to the open book. The page reads, "All doors lead forward, even the ones that are closed."
You've been listening to Curvature Chronicles. Sarah has confirmed the truth. The artifact is changing Caster. Can he control what he's becoming, or will it control him? And in the shadows, Vershek's plan moves closer to reality. In our next episode, the choices Caster makes may decide more than just his fate. If you're enjoying the story, don't forget to follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you're listening. For lore updates and bonus content, visit curvaturechronicles.space or find me on Instagram, YouTube, and X at @curvechron. Until next time, keep your eyes on the curve, because every story bends reality.